Hello, friend. I'm so glad you're here. My name is Zach Holt, and this is Come to the Table. Some of our most intimate conversations happen at the kitchen table. Walls crumble as space is created to know one another more deeply. Our hurt and our heartache are replaced by hope and healing when we pull up a chair, let down our guard, and simply be who we are, where we are. In our time together, we will step into the shoes of others through recovery stories of redemption, offer resources and connections for those in need, and come together as a community starving for revival in our region. So if you're hungry, you came to the right place. Well, guys, we're so excited to have all of you with us today. It's always such a blessing every week to get to come together, to get to hear different voices and perspectives and stories. Last week, we were able to join with Ricky on a full hour live episode, and we look forward to that on the first episode of every month. We'll open up the phone lines and create space for people who have either something really cool they want to celebrate with the community or a struggle that they're having, a recovery-related question, just whatever it may be. As long as it's not about your taxes, that's outside the scope of what I'm able to offer. But if it has to do with recovery, your faith, your struggles, we would love to hear from you. So keep listening. As we get a little bit closer, we'll remind you that the first episode of every month, we'll have an hour-long live episode and hopefully be able to continue and support our listeners in any and every way that we can. So we're back on our regular rhythm of interviews and just hearing from folks about the brokenness that they've been brought out of and what a life of recovery really looks like, because it's so much more than just stopping using. And so today we're going to hear from a dear friend of mine, Krista. And so we're going to hear Krista's story of redemption and just a beautiful and a touching story from a beautiful and just a wonderful soul. And so we're really excited to have Krista. You want to say hi?
Hello.
So let's get right into it. So tell me a little bit about your background, your backstory, and I may stop you along the way and ask some questions. But why don't you just dive in and just share your heart with us?
Okay. I'm Krista, and I am 38 years old. I have a 7-year-old son, and I'm also a combat veteran from Iraq, and a Purple Heart recipient.
Congratulations on that. Thank you.
Thank
for that.
You.
Yeah. So, how did your journey begin? Like growing up, did you come from around this area?
I moved to Tennessee when I was 12 years old from Pennsylvania.
Okay.
My dad's job brought us to the area.
Yeah. What kind of work did he do?
He was in telecommunications.
Oh, really? Okay. Mm-hmm. Was that a big culture shock, moving from Pennsylvania to Tennessee?
It was, but the one thing I noticed the most was that the grass was a lot greener. So the grass was actually greener on the,
on
other,
the other side.
Side.
Yeah. I love it. That's great. That's great. So how did you do, middle school and high school? Were you pretty well adjusted, had good friends? You seem like a really social person. So, like, was that hard for you?
No, it was actually pretty easy. I was in band, and I was also on the swim team. I just dove right in when I got here and continued, doing all the things that I did in Pennsylvania.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What instrument did you play in band?
Flute.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. You still know how to play?
I'm sure I could. It's been a long time, though.
Okay. My worst grade in elementary school was whenever we had to learn the recorder, and it was the only unsatisfactory that I got in elementary school, which was surprising because I had terrible behavior. But I remember my music teacher telling me that she said, "Zach, you can go a long way in life in a lot of different areas, but music is not one of them." I still remember those words haunt me, though. And that's true, but. So then after high school, did you get right into the military?
I did not. I started working and tried college, but that senioritis was so strong in me, I was not ready to go back to school. And I did get into some partying and experimenting at that time. Mm-hmm. And I realized I needed to get back into the discipline of, band and swimming and school and all of that. So I did something drastic. I joined the Army.
Now, were you, okay, so you did swim in, so you were kind of fit, I guess, and so the physical fitness stuff was pretty easy for you?
It was a struggle.
Oh, it
because
was not
easy. I am below 5 feet tall.
Okay.
So it was a struggle for me to keep in step with all those males that were much bigger than me mm-hmm. and did not struggle at all.
Mm-hmm.
And to be able to, now the push-ups I did pretty well, but the mm-hmm. running and all that, not so good.
No.
I had to work at it. Let's put it that way.
Okay. Could you reach the pull-up bar when you guys had to do pull-up?
Did they give
you a stool?
That's where my battle buddies came in and helped me.
Good. That's awesome. And then, so went through basic and deployed. How long after did you finish training that you went to Iraq?
Not even 3 months.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And what was the transition like moving into that context? That's super different.
Well, out of OSIT training, one station unit training for military police, that's what I was in the Army, I went to Fort Lewis, Washington, and we went into full training mode mm-hmm. for Iraq. And it was hit the ground running.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like that until we deployed. So those 3 months were very busy.
Pretty intense leading up to it.
Yes.
Yeah. Did that stir up like a lot of like fear, like knowing that, yeah, in a couple months we're going to be overseas actually on the ground? Were you anxious about all that or fearful of all that?
Well, I have a funny story about it. I wasn't until 3 or 4 days before we deployed.
Mm-hmm.
And I called my mom and I told her she had to come all the way across the country to see me before I left, because I got very scared and I threatened her that I would come home.
Hmm.
That I would come home and live with her and stay with her and not go to Iraq if she didn't come see me. So she came to see me, and that alleviated a lot of fears that I had.
Did she fly or did she drive?
She flew.
Okay.
She brought my brother and my grandmother with her.
Yeah. All it took was, I'm going to come home and live with you.
Yep.
And she was on a jet within an hour. So now there was an event that happened while you were over there that kind of shaped and formed you in a special way. So do you want to share as much of that? Do you want to share about that?
Well, there were several times that I was put in very dangerous situations. I mean, this is war we're talking about, mm-hmm. and where people were injured or worse, and equipment was completely destroyed. You know, I could have lost my life many a times,
mm-hmm.
but there was one time, which was November 30th of 2007, where my truck was hit by IEDs and my gunner, I was driving, and my gunner was killed in action.
Mm. You still remember it like it was yesterday? It was pretty clear.
Yes. Yeah. It doesn't hold the same torment mm-hmm. as it used to. Thanks to recovery
mm-hmm.
and the help that I've received.
Yeah.
But for many years, I felt like I was locked in this box with that memory.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So after that event happened, what did the next several years of your life look like? You said, so it kind of felt like you were trapped in a box that you couldn't get out of. And can you share a little bit more about that?
I was still in the Army, and I decided I was going to put everything into work. I wasn't going to be one of those who came home and fell apart.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I did. I started working all the time. And then my feet started hurting really bad.
Mm.
And they couldn't find out what was wrong with them. But they were, it was very, very painful to walk. And what I found out about it was nerve damage in both my feet from the different times my trucks were blown up and all the wear and tear from the boots from Iraq
mm-hmm.
Had caught up with me. And they had put me on copious amounts of pain medicine.
Yeah.
Before they found out what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
So I became addicted to pain meds.
Mm-hmm.
I also started having panic attacks.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't working through any of this stuff. So it was showing its ugly face anyway. So they also put me on copious amounts of anxiety meds. Mm-hmm. And these were all controlled substances.
Mm-hmm. So your initial strategy was, well, I'm just going to stay busy enough that, you know, just keep pushing through it. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, before we've talked about with other conversations that we've had that sometimes when we're trying to push something down, it's almost like you have a beach ball under the water at the swimming pool and you keep trying to resist. It's you know, naturally it's going to want to come up out of the water, but we keep trying to press it down and press it down and press it down. It takes so much effort. And the reality is that the stuff we press down doesn't get better. It gets bigger. And then so it sounds like you kind of in response to that began to treat the symptoms rather than what was actually at the core of the trauma that you experienced.
Right. And that went on for a long time.
Yeah.
It wasn't till 2020 that I really started working on myself.
Mm-hmm. And what has been, what have been some of the tools, different things that have really helped you? Between your faith and the tools and all the different pieces, like what has helped you to kind of break out of that darkness into light?
Well, first of all, I had to want to live again.
Mm-hmm.
And when I had my son, that really changed. He's a game changer. Having him changed my life. But yet I was still in that turmoil of bondage.
Mm-hmm.
So,
sure.
You know, I had to figure out how to get out of that, and I didn't know where to start,
mm-hmm.
You know. So my life actually went down a little bit darker path for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was trained and taught to never quit, never surrender, mm-hmm. You know, that you can do it yourself,
mm-hmm.
You know. And we come to learn in recovery,
mm-hmm.
that it's a spiritual problem.
Yeah.
He's a spiritual solution.
Yeah.
So this is something I couldn't do on my own.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that has been one of the hardest things to accept. But once I have accepted it, things just take off running,
mm-hmm.
and work out in my life.
Mm-hmm.
So that has been very helpful, learning to accept the help and find the help.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing that I have a higher power,
mm-hmm.
that is always there willing to help me.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. So before I've asked a couple others about this quote from a guy's name is Johan Hari, and he says that the opposite of addiction is not sobriety, it's human connection. And so it sounds like that has sort of been kind of your experience in finding community, finding people to come beside and to support you. I don't know that I've met too many people who have flourished in recovery who have done so in isolation. It's almost like recovery, and it's not independence, but it's like interdependence. It's like a reliance on each other, and to know that you have people that are there for you, you know, in the same way God is there for us. You know, I think we're called to be part of a community that can bear our burdens, you know, that can help carry us when we're down. And so what would you say through everything that you struggled with and everything you went through, what have been a couple of the lessons from your recovery that you say, like, if somebody's just kind of starting out and they're trying to put some time together, like, what would you say to them to kind of maybe encourage them to keep pressing forward?
That this really does work.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you don't think so, or that you're not achieving what you want to in
mm-hmm.
the time that
mm-hmm.
you want to,
mm-hmm.
That it will come. That sobriety will come,
mm-hmm.
And then the connections with people that you want back,
mm-hmm.
some you may not even believe you can have back, but it's possible. I'm living proof it is possible to have those relationships restored to you.
Mm-hmm.
What else would I tell someone just starting out? if one thing doesn't work for you, try something else.
That's really good.
Yeah, don't give up just because things are difficult and it's not working. There's so many things you can do that is so much better than staying in active addiction.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think a lot of times with you know, people that we see that do well in recovery and flourish in recovery, because it's not really enough just to remove the drink or the drug. It's almost like you need to fill that space with something that's going to build you up, feed your soul, and occupy your time in a good way, you know? And so, yeah, I don't think we can do it, you know, just removing it and then just having idle time. You know, they say about idle time, idle hands. It's not good for anybody, but especially in early recovery. I don't know that I would have made it through my first year if I didn't have a gym membership. That for me was huge, because I can reach the pull-up bar. Yeah, so so, you know, to the time in the military, I mean, that had to have taught you a lot about discipline and about structure. So how is some of the lessons that you learned from the military turned out into like a positive thing for your recovery and your outlook? Have there been lessons you've learned from that have been kind of transferred over into your life today? Are there ways that you've seen that your time in the military has shaped you in a positive way? I know negatively you had some trauma that you went through, but were there positive things that came out of you, out of the experience?
Yes, I learned that I have a lot of heart, mm-hmm. and in recovery, I have had to, you know, I spent a lot of years just doing what I wanted, mm-hmm. you know, so going back to having some sort of discipline in my life, it does remind me a lot of the military and having to be places on time and committing to things, you know, I'm learning to do that again. Mm-hmm. But it is nice to have that baseline that once upon a time in my life, I was able to do these things. So I can remind myself, Krista, you can do this. Yeah. You did it before, mm-hmm. you know? You can definitely go to meetings. You can definitely step out of your comfort zone and talk to people. You know, you can get out of bed today. Mm-hmm. You know, things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can come and be on a radio show.
Yeah.
So how did you maybe share a little bit about, okay, so like what's the difference in how you saw yourself in active addiction? Like when you looked in the mirror, like who was that person, and then how do you see yourself now?
Well, in active addiction, I was highly suicidal.
Mm-hmm.
It is sad but true that veterans mm-hmm. have a very high suicide rate,
yeah.
And I was one of them that was suicidal, and so I didn't look in the mirror much.
Mm-hmm.
I believe I was, very delusional about myself,
mm-hmm.
and, didn't know who I was at all,
mm-hmm.
you know? And now, I have, in the past few years, I have done a lot of work to reintroduce myself to myself and learn who Krista really is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I'm more than taking drugs and being depressed all the time, you know, or the chaos and the drama of drug addiction. I'm more than that, you know, and learning what I like and what I don't like, you know, things like that. Learning I have a personality, and it's okay to like certain things and not like other things, you know, like, I hate green beans. My son just taunts me about green beans, you know? But today I get to learn about what I don't like, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And to set boundaries with people,
mm-hmm.
you know? I'm able and capable of doing these things now. And that makes me like myself a lot better.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So how has the relationship with your son kind of evolved since you've been clean?
Well, him coming into the world was really why I wanted to change my life.
Yeah.
I wasn't quite ready to admit that I was an addict yet, though.
Mm-hmm.
So until I was able to come to terms with that,
mm-hmm.
nothing really changed. In fact, mm-hmm. it went darker and darker,
sure.
you know. But when I got treatment, he was still very young. And he lives with my parents, so I'm able to be in his life 100%, you know. And the way things have changed is, even though Andrew was small, he doesn't see his mom high,
mm-hmm.
you know. And also I'm more connected with him, and not just with, you know, getting out of active addiction and getting into recovery, but also healing from a lot of these wounds and trauma.
Yeah.
Because I could be sober and be with him and feel so disconnected
yeah.
from all my loved ones.
Mm-hmm.
And having healed from a lot of trauma, working through it with my higher power,
mm-hmm.
with therapy, you know, and staying sober,
mm-hmm.
I'm now a more engaged mom than I ever have been.
Yeah.
You know? And our time together is quality,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Every minute of it is just special.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I remember whenever I was going through everything I went through and, you know, the things that my daughter saw and just, you know, I mean, I was around, but I wasn't there. I wasn't present, you know, for her in the way that I wish I was, and in the way I feel like a father should. And I, you know, I feel like that I've failed her in a lot of ways. And I was kind of lost because I thought that there was never going to be a chance to rectify that, you know, to really be the kind of dad that I want to be to her, the kind of father that I see in God, and sort of that model, and wanting to, you know, emulate that. And, you know, but he's gracious and, you know, gives us opportunities in recovery. You know, not, we can't erase it and go backwards, but, it can still be redemptive, you know? And so the way that, you know, we love each other really well. And I think on the other side of addiction, I think that I'm a better father to her than I ever could have been if I didn't struggle, you know? And so it's really cool because the kind of the common theme across folks that we have conversations with on here is restoration. That's a mm-hmm. word that comes up over and over and over again, that it's not just about not using. It's about all of the brokenness of our pain and our trauma and all of the hurt that we caused. And somehow in the midst of that, it all comes back together and creates something new and beautiful. One of the largest mosaics in the world is in the St. Louis Cathedral, and it is composed of 41 million pieces, like 41 million tiles. And I always thought that was so cool because it's like there's so much brokenness that has to happen for all of that to come together into a new portrait, into a new picture. Mm-hmm. And I think our lives of recovery, our stories, you know, they may seem you know, like it was really hard and really dark, but it's like on the other side of it, you see God painting on a canvas bigger than the eyes can see.
Yeah,
you see something
sure.
really, really beautiful.
And I think God is the Father of time. I
yeah.
truly believe He is the Father of time, and He can restore those years and
oh, yes.
moments.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen Him do it in my own life, you know,
mm-hmm.
Seeing my mother proud of me.
Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
after breaking her heart for years and years, to see her be able to go, okay, she's okay. Krista
yeah.
is okay.
Yeah.
You know, and to be able to be part of that
mm-hmm.
and know that it is because of the hard work and the recovery I have that I get to have that moment with my mom, mm-hmm. to watch her be okay.
Yeah.
You know, God just restores so much.
Yeah. So what are you most excited about moving forward into the next season of your life? What are, do you have any kind of, yeah, what's next for you?
Well, I am going to school right now.
Okay.
For criminal justice. So I'm still, you know, pursuing a career and that, mm-hmm. since my military career as military police. I don't want to be a police officer, mm-hmm. but I want to do something with the criminal justice system.
Mm-hmm.
I also am committed to the table, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. Serving and watching it grow. Because, wow, it has grown in the last couple years. I'm so excited about
it.
It's
a lot of fun.
Yeah, and just being a mom. Mm-hmm. Those are my goals for the next few years, mm-hmm. or 2 years, mm-hmm. is to just continue serving in the community, mm-hmm. and being a part of, mm-hmm. Being a part of.
Yeah.
You know.
Part of a family.
Yeah, for sure.
Part of a family. And I know, you know, just it's such a joy to have you be, you know, part of the work that we're doing, and just to see you said something about your heart early on, and I'm like, yep, that's it. Like, you have a huge heart, and just the way you've come aside some of our folks when they've been in struggles, and, you know, there's a part in there where it says, let us comfort one another with the comfort we ourselves have received. And it's cool to see how some of those past wounds and hurts and trauma can actually be repurposed through you to build a bridge to someone else who's kind of going through what God has brought you out of. And it's really, really cool to watch God shine through you. And I know our friends on the radio can't see your smile, but you shine when you smile. And it's really, really cool to get to see that. So in the last minute that we have left, as we wrap up, I pretty much ask the same question every week, and it's cool to get the different answers. But if you could speak directly into the ear of a person who is out there and still struggling and walking in addiction, maybe has been separated from their children and just going through darkness, what would you say to that person right now?
You are forgiven.
Yeah.
And the reason I say that is because that was whispered into my ear. Mm-hmm. I lived in shame and guilt for being an addict, and stayed in that shame and guilt, fueling my addiction for a long time. And when I heard those words, "You are forgiven," it broke something in me. Now I can get started. I don't have to walk this way anymore. I don't have to look down at my shoes anymore. You know? That's what I would say.
That's perfect. That's beautiful. Well, friends, thank you so much for joining us on this episode of Come to the Table. We hope that it has been an encouragement to your recovery and perhaps created in you a curiosity about what it means to live into a new mindset of selfless service to others. If you'd like to know more about our ministry or for coaching on how you can more faithfully walk with others in their time of need, we would love to connect with you and pour into you. If you're interested in recovery resources or creating spaces for spiritual growth, you can reach out to us at thetablebristol117@gmail.com. You don't have to walk this road alone. Hope and redemption, beauty from ashes, light from dark are all so much closer than you know. Grace and peace to you.